SBS Radio.
Hugh Stanley Carey, from Western Australia, whose story of hanging out with gangsters in Rio de Janeiro's most dangerous favela went viral, says he wants to use his newfound fame to help children in the slum. Talking to SBS Portuguese from a boat surrounded by islands in Indonesia, Hugo explained why he decided to visit one of the most dangerous places in Rio de Janeiro.
Hi, how are you doing?
Where are you right now?
I'm in a place called Raja Ampat, which is sort of in Indonesia, but near Papua New Guinea, on a diving trip, a liveaboard diving trip for my dad's 70th birthday.
You are talking to us from the middle of the ocean on a boat?
Surrounded by islands, but yes, I'm in the middle of nowhere. I'm surprised I have reception right now.
You became very famous because of your trip to Complexo do Alemão, one of the most dangerous places in Rio de Janeiro. Why did you want to go to Complexo do Alemão at around 3:30 a.m.?
Well, firstly, I don't know about very famous, but yeah, it went a little bit viral over there. To give you, I don't have like a very precise answer as to why I went there. And I didn't actually know I was going to that particular favela. Probably a combination of events that had sort of led up to that moment. Just people I'd met and things I'd heard about favelas being obviously dangerous places, but also some of the most authentic places in Brazil, you know, full of life, full of community, full of atmosphere. I know that there's a lot of tours that go to some of the more, I guess, the safer ones that are sort of set up as, you know, tourist places. I guess I can blame my mother for my adventurous side. My whole life, we've sort of done things a little bit outside the square. And this particular morning, you know, I'd been out and then decided to, you know, I didn't want to go home yet. And I've spoken to a lady who worked at a hostel who had actually invited me to come to her favela. She lives in one, and not as a tour, but just to sort of hang out and be part of the community. So I had that idea in my mind, and also met or shared a room with a guy in a hostel who'd been teaching as a volunteer English to kids in the favela, and he'd shown me some of his videos of the kids and just the sort of community life there. So it was just sort of, I guess, it was in my mind something I wanted to do. Probably wasn't the smartest time to go, but anyway, it was what I felt like doing at that particular time. And yeah, so I actually got a girl from a fast food joint a burger place to write me a letter, which sort of said my intentions. And I said, hi, my name's Hugo. I come here as a guest. I come in peace. I bring nothing but love. Just here to meet you guys and experience your favela if I'm allowed to. So that's all I took with me, really. I didn't take much money or anything blingy. I just sort of went there with that letter and just to sort of see if I could, I guess, hang out there and sort of be part of the community for a while. And I guess the motivation to sort of asking the taxi driver to go to one of the more dangerous places, I just wanted to go somewhere authentic, not to one of the places that's has tours going all the time. You know, I know about the tours where people go in sort of open top Jeep vehicles and watch people go about their lives, you know, like it's some sort of animal safari. Like that just doesn't agree well with me. So I wanted to go somewhere that people, tourists hasn't already sort of tainted the feeling, I guess, and to go somewhere authentic. And I guess maybe a little bit of me wanted to go somewhere dangerous as well, because I kind of like that sometimes.
You had this letter, this translated letter in Portuguese saying that you came in peace and you just want to be there. The driver chose Complexo do Alemão.
Yeah, right? So that's correct. Yeah. So I mean, I don't know if it's the most dangerous one, but I think it's probably was up there and maybe closer than some other ones. I'm not too sure. But anyway, that's where we ended up. I had no idea where I was. And the driver said, no, he wouldn't take me all the way there. So he stopped about 500 meters away from, I guess, the beginning of it and told me which direction to walk. He did give me a very funny look when I asked him where I wanted to go. So, yeah, I basically walked in. By this time, you know, it was probably, I don't know, maybe 4:30, because it was maybe 3:30 when I decided I was going to go. And then, you know, we wrote the letter, got the Uber, all that sort of stuff. So it was maybe 4:30 or 5 I was actually walking in there. And there was people that were walking out on the way to work, which I got a few funny looks, but no one said anything. I walked in, got picked up pretty quickly by, I guess, call them scouts, two guys, you know, armed guys, you know, probably in their late sort of teens. And they, I guess they were just surprised. But they, you know, they were cool. They approached me and asked me what I was doing and gave me the time to sort of try and explain what my intentions were. So they weren't aggressive towards me.
Do you show the letter? Did you have the letter with
you?
Yeah,
and I went to find the letter and it had gone. So I don't know whether I dropped it in the Uber or it fell out of my pocket on the walk. So that was a bit of an uh-oh moment. But it was okay. I wasn't going to spend time fumbling around my pockets when they were looking at me. They thought I was a police officer, so I wasn't going to make it look like I was looking for something on my body. So I just basically quickly used my phone for Google Translate and just my body language and my facial expressions and some broken English that we both understood. I had to sort of explain that I was just there in peace. They took the time to actually listen to me. They didn't judge me straight up, so that was nice. And yeah, it did take some time, but they eventually believed me that I wasn't a police officer. And from that point on, I was actually treated really well. So they never threatened me or were, I guess, made me feel uncomfortable or in danger at any point.
And they were armed. Were they carrying, like, big guns across their bodies?
Yeah, they were machine guns, yep.
And after you guys talk through things, did you start walking with them or they just let you go?
Yeah, so I don't really want to say too much about, you know, the guys and what they were doing, because I do respect their, you know, anonymity. I'll just say, look, I was with them, we hung out, we went about, I guess, their usual business. Then there was a point a bit later, like maybe an hour later or so, they took me to an exit and said, you know, you can go now, you're welcome to go. It's not, you know, it's not safe here. I think they were more worried about some other danger coming, whether it be police or another gang, and there'd be obviously shots fired and then me'd be stuck in the crossfire. So they were concerned about my safety in this particular area that I was. I guess it's on the fringe of the favela. You know, at that point when they said I can go, I said, like, I don't want to go yet, having a lot of fun. And they, you know, spoke to a few people on radio and then decided that I could stay. So then we walked quite a while, much further into the favela and higher up, and met some other people. And yeah, I basically hung out with them throughout the day. You know, we told them about sort of my life, they told about their life, we shared stories, played music, joked around, I had a few beers with them. It was just basically just like mates hanging out, really, like I would back home. During the time, obviously, walking through the community, I met and saw, I saw lots of people. It wasn't till the end of the day that I actually really hung out with some of the kids and that sort of thing. But yeah, it was around 5 o'clock or so a.m. that I went in there. I didn't leave these particular guys. Later on in the afternoon, they were like, yeah, you know, it was just time for me to go. So I said farewell to them all. We all sort of shook hands and I left, and I was given an escort down like to a safe exit. And then when I left, actually, that's when I ended up going to a shop. I got some food and I met some little kids came up and they were quite curious about me. And I don't speak Portuguese, so I just started showing them a magic trick I have with a coin. And they absolutely loved it and they ran and got their friends. And then so I ended up staying with them for about 20 minutes, half an hour or so. And then and by this time, it was probably about 4 p.m. I was pretty tired then because I had obviously been to sleep since I'd woken up the day before at around sort of 7 a.m. or something. So it's been roughly, I don't know, 33 hours or so of being awake. So I was pretty tired. And yeah, after I left the kids, well, there was no taxis there and my phone had died now. So I couldn't order an Uber. So I was a little bit stuck. So some of the local community actually helped me. They came out, they charged my phone. We managed to get a ride and then, yeah, went home safely.
How was it to have a glimpse of the life of these guys, you know, these scouts and how they go about their lives? They are well known in Brazil as very violent.
I genuinely didn't feel like these guys were bad people. I mean, I know that they're capable of bad things, and I'm sure the media and the history is probably pretty bad reputation, I guess, in certain ways, but all I have is my actual experience, and I just saw them as they were just like mates to me. Like, there's obviously, despite the language barrier, the location, the conditions they live in, and you know, and the weapons, we were just brothers hanging out. It could have been my mates back home, and I felt safe. Like, the impression I got from them and from the way the people in the community, I guess, looked at them when they were walking past with, you know, their weapons. It wasn't like they were a threat or they were the danger. It's more like they're the protectors. That's the sort of impression I got. There's a lot of people, a lot of eyes watching the favela. good communication between the people. So when I was there and when I'd been accepted, I felt completely safe. I don't think there's a safer place to be than when you're on, you know, behind the lines, I guess. And yeah, these guys felt a lot more like protectors than they were a threat or a danger.
Today, now, do you realize you could have been killed? Do you think you're lucky? How do you look back now?
I do. I think the luckiest thing for me was that I wasn't, I guess, shot on my entry, because I understand a lot of that sort of stuff. You know, when previous people have been killed, it's usually due to misunderstanding or a fear that that particular person coming is a threat or a danger, and they open fire out of, you know, I guess make a quick decision, and sometimes the wrong decision based on, you know, fear of what might happen. So I was lucky that they gave me the chance, I guess, to approach and actually communicate my intentions before they made any immediate action. So I do appreciate that. I'm very lucky for that.
And as you mentioned, the story was taken by the Brazilian and Australian media. We have the biggest news outlets here interviewing you. One of them called your actions a bit stupid. How did you feel about that, about being judged?
That's fine. I guess there's always a fine line between courage and stupidity. And I guess, you know, me not knowing the full ins and outs makes me stupid for doing something. You know, I took a risk. It's a calculated risk. But me not knowing the full story makes it more of a stupid risk. So I understand that. But anyway, I guess it was maybe a little bit stupid, but I wasn't putting anybody else in harm. It's not like I was drink driving and putting the, you know, people on the road at risk. It was a purely my own thing. I didn't go there to try and become famous or to try and get any sort of media coverage. It was a complete surprise when a reporter came to my hostel trying to find me in the morning, because I think someone from the favela wrote a small blog, and then that went viral or something. I don't know. But there was never intention of mine to sort of talk about this publicly. It just happened. But I mean, I think, and the reason why I'm talking to people now is I just don't want the wrong story to be said. If it's going to be talked about, I may as well try and at least have the truth be said. But I am trying to use it now if I can try and do some good. So I am trying to raise a bit of money if I can for the kids of this favela, just to help out with, you know, education and that sort of thing.
This fund is specifically for the Complexo do Alemão children?
It is at this stage, yeah. I mean, if things went crazy with it, which it hasn't, sometimes these funds go blow up and they make a lot of money. Of course, I would share it around. At this point in time, it is mainly just for this particular favela. That's only because that was my experience. It was just by pure luck that the driver decided to take me there. And yeah, so I'd like to, if it's only a small amount of money, then obviously it's not going to go very far. So I will focus it on this particular favela for now.
And how people can contribute?
The campaign's going okay. We've raised just over 2,000, but the majority of that sort of come from, I guess, my close network of people. So I've had a couple of donations from outside, but only a couple really, like two or three. But yeah, so it's on at the moment, because I have had a lot of really positive comments from the Brazilian people, you know, and I've had a lot of really lovely comments from the parents of the kids in the favela that I was doing magic for. I've had few of them contact me and say some really nice things about, you know, thanks for coming and spending time here and seeing us for who we are. You know, they think that I'll just read out her, some of her comments. Like she says that because we're poor, people think we don't count. So stuff like that has been really touching to receive. And I'd really love to be able to give I was treated well there, and I would be a really nice end to the story to be able to give something back as a present, something for the children. And I've also had some of the kids have contacted me that I was actually hanging out with, and I'm surprised how intelligent they are for their ages. And it really sucks that these guys don't have the same opportunities that the rest of us have. That's what really breaks my heart. There's just so much, they're so bright and so full of life, but it just really sucks they don't actually get to reach their full potential from factors that are completely outside of their control. So despite what's going on with the politics, the police, the drugs, these are just kids. You know, they have no choice in the matter. And it breaks my heart that they don't actually get to reach their full potential because of factors that they've got no control over. That really sucks. I was really lucky to have, you know, a safe place to grow up, education, whatever I want as far as if I want to develop myself, the opportunities were there. And it really broke. Yeah, it sucks when people don't have that same opportunity. And I know I can't change the whole thing, but if I can add a little bit or help a few kids just to sort of maybe reach their goals or their potential a little bit more, I'm sure they're so desperate to learn and so hungry for access to information technology or sport, access to sports or whatever it may be, even chef school, like, well, I don't know, there's so many things, whatever they want to do, it'd be great to help out a little bit in some way.
It's amazing that they were proud and happy that you saw them for who they are, because they are invisible in yes. our society.
They don't have a lot. And I know there's people all over the world, which I think maybe in Australia, some of the, you know, the, like, again, the way the media picked up the article, they just painted me as a drunken Aussie doing a stupid act, which is fine because they don't know that a lot of people just, they go on holidays, they take Instagram photos and they go home. They don't know shit about actual meeting people and experiencing culture. So I get that. Yeah, these people are really amazing, and I would happily go back and spend more time there. I'd love to, really.
And just in terms of that, you would like to go back. Would you do it again the way you did it?
I don't know. I mean, yes, I would. I would happily go back to the same place and hang out with the same guys. But I don't know the way, like, there's been a few media reports of stuff which just didn't happen, things I did not say. And I don't know whether the particular guys are looking at that going, you know, and are upset with me. So I don't want to catch a bullet, obviously, going back there. I think if I do come back, I'll probably speak to some people and try and explain to them exactly that I haven't been saying anything in any, anyway, you know what I mean? It's a balancing act. I'm trying to help some people, but I'm also trying to fully respect these guys who are really good to me. And yes, I would love to go back, but I also don't want to go back if people are pissed off, and I don't want to get shot. I'm not trying to die here.
What is your message then to other tourists that are, you know, going to Rio, going to Brazil?
I think just respect people. And I don't want to sort of paint a picture that everything's all great, because, and I definitely don't want someone to go do what I did on the back of my story thinking they're going to have an amazing experience as well, and then obviously something bad to happen. I want that to be pretty clear that this was probably a once-off. And I just, you know, respect people, respect their country. Usually when you're in a place, especially like Brazil, that's full of amazing people and full of love, they're going to give you the best trip and the best experience of your life if you come in like that.
Hugo, thanks so much for taking this call there in Indonesia.
No problem.
On your boat, celebrating.
So
can
I just say as well, so if somebody does, listening, do want to actually donate or make a small contribution, that would be fantastic. You know, even $5, something will all add up. I've got on my Facebook page, you can just search Hugo Carey, it's on there. But yeah, if you could try and track it down, if you're able to make a donation, that would be fantastic.
Tell us what you think. Like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter.